agenda. I'm going to talk about five parts. Let's go to the first one. Insurance companies sell contracts. They don't have to build a plant, or they don't have to manufacture products. They just sell contracts. Contracts is a promise to pay. Of course, regulators want to make sure that insurance companies will fulfill the promise. Traditionally, the required capital for insurance companies was based on simple rule of thumb. Say, the premium to capital ratio, like a 1-to-3, something like that. In the 80s, NAIC, it's a regulatory body, developed a risk-based capital, try to better link risk to capital. But so far has only limited success. It's common sense. Insurance capital should be linked to risk, to the total risk of the insurance company. And enterprise risk modeling is a prerequisite for that. Because we need to first to know that how much capital is required before we can more efficiently manage our excess capital. Inspired by the banking industry, I think insurance regulators are moving in the same direction. In terms of insurance operation, traditionally it was viewed as mainly underwriting function, and they just put money in the bank without much investment activity, especially for P&C companies. And another view is a financial view. They see insurance operation as a mutual fund, because you first collect premium and you pay your loss maybe 5 years later. In fact, that's a way of generating accumulate fund, and then you can manage your investment. Those are two extreme views. In fact, we need an integrated view which to look at both the underwriting and the investment. I think Warren Buffett is a very good example for that. And AIG, one of their success secret is that they can manage their excess capital very efficiently. They manage some hedge fund and generate very high returns. Of course, they also have sound risk management. Just want to give you a little bit idea about the property and casualty industry. It was overcapitalized. One reason for that is insurance management, they want to keep the capital to themselves. They don't want to return to shareholders. And what do they do with the extra capital? They want to fight for market share. They want to squeeze out other competitors. So there was a huge price cutting. And as a result, the industry suffered huge underwriting losses. On top of that, September 11, tremendous industry loss. And all the excess capital was washed away. That sounded a wake-up call to the industry. And now, most companies are getting more serious about risk. They're getting very serious about taking risk. And they're very serious about enterprise firm-wide risk modeling. Now I'm going to talk about some tools for measuring risk. I'm going to start with very basic economic model. A risk is modeled as a probability distribution here. And the price for that risk depends on the risk itself and the market. And Z here, or Z, represents the aggregate market condition. And in the insurance market, there are many agents, and each one of them is trying to maximize his or her own effect utility. It's a very basic fundamental economic model. Professor Buhlmann did some very good work in the 80s, and here's one important result. He started with exponential utility function, but later on he generalized this to a general utility function. He found out that in equilibrium, what's equilibrium? It means that every player maximizes his or her own expected utility. And in equilibrium, the price for risk X is the following. The denominator there is the normalizing constant. In fact, this is a exponential tilting, so this is a normalizing constant. Don't worry about the denominator. The numerator is very interesting. You apply exponential function of the aggregate market risk. And this is actually very similar to the state price density in finance. And Z here is the aggregate market risk or industry risk. And lambda is the market price of risk related to individual players. So in equilibrium, in fact, we have the following transformation. F is the P measure or physical measure. With this transformation, we can get a Q measure, a price. So this, in fact, this exponential tilting is inspired from Buhlmann's result. And the expected value under the transformed distribution is the price. When X is independent of the from the market, we can see that conditional on F given X, they will cancel out, numerator and denominator, right? In that case, you don't need any risk adjustment. What the implication is that for diversifiable risk, you don't need any risk adjustment, which is consistent with financial economics. In fact, for a reference portfolio Z, Z can be market or can be industry or can be a company total risk. Given the reference portfolio Z, and we can decompose the risk into systematic risk and non-systematic risk. Systematic portion is called monotone, means if Z increases, the systematic risk will not decrease. So they always move in the same direction. There is no diversification benefit between the two. Again, here, systematic risk only has relative meaning. It has a reference portfolio. Depend on your reference portfolio, it's market, stock market, or insurance industry, or your company portfolio. It's very flexible. But it works universally. Now let's make an assumption. It's assumed that market portfolio has normal distribution, and with market price risk of lambda. Zero. And risk X can have any distribution, but risk X and Z subnormal copula, which is extension of multivariate normal distribution. And then we get the following result. The exponential tilting is equivalent to this transformation. So what it does is that for any given distribution for x, you apply a normal inverse, and then you shift by lambda. Lambda is marked by the risk, and then apply normal distribution again. So the exponential tilting of Billman would give you this result under this assumption. And this lambda is related to the market price risk by the following relation. And this rho is a correlation coefficient. And rho can be positive, can be negative. And what if X itself has a normal distribution? Then we get exactly the standard deviation loading. But in general, we don't need put any restriction on the F, which is the distribution of X. So this result actually is an extension of cap M, because in cap M, X itself has normal distribution. This transformation was developed in the actual literature over 10 years of research, based on no arbitrage reinsurance pricing. I'm not going to get into that because of a lot of other stuff to talk about. And it has close connections with financial theory, because it's the generalization of cap M, and also from this transformation, you can derive the Black-Scholes formula for options. In credit risk, I think Crowley and his colleagues derived a similar type of transformation for credit risk. This transformation actually would give you a unified treatment of insurance risk and financial risk, because any risk depends on which party, which side of the transaction you are in, it can be treated as a gain or loss. The gain is a counterparty's loss. It can be looked at from two perspectives. And this parameter lambda, I want to remind you that lambda is related to the correlation with the market. So depending on which side of the transaction, the lambda should have different signs. But once you change your sign in lambda, you get consistent price, no matter you look at from which side of the transaction. So this is good because insurance companies dealing with liabilities and assets, and this would enable insurance companies to look at financial risk and insurance risk consistently. It has a parameter lambda. Lambda, in fact, is a generalization for the market price of risk and the Sharpe ratio for fund managers, which is a direct extension of cap M, because here we are not assuming a normal distribution for X. It can have any distribution. But how good is it in pricing insurance and credit risk? That's what we are interested in. We need to do some reality check. The reality check tells us that this transformation is not good enough. And we need a two-factor model to reflect higher moments, because this is an extension of the two-moment cap M. Okay, let's move on to two-factor model. I want to first to talk about parameter risk. You know, we can assume a distribution and talk about a lot about theory, but in reality, there's no way we know the distribution. We have to estimate it. Here is a classic piece of sampling theory from a population of with normal distributions without knowing the true mean and standard deviation. In fact, from M observations, we have to make, we have to estimate the parameter, right? And when we make probability inference of a future outcome, we cannot really use normal distribution. In fact, we need to use a student t. Does that make sense to you? What about the general distribution? I mean, from normal to student t. I mean, the mathematician behind that paper, behind the student t paper, already proved it. But what about the general distribution? When we talk about bounded default, Moody's Standard Poor compiled historical default probability. Of course, we have parameter uncertainty there. Say F is the historical probability of default. We need to adjust for parameter uncertainty, and this method, it gives you a way to adjust for parameter uncertainty. For historical probability of default, we first apply inverse normal and then apply student t. So that's a consistent way for adjusting for parameter uncertainty. Now we put the one-factor transform with this parameter uncertainty adjustment, then we have a two-factor transform. Here has two parameters. Lambda is market price risk, and Q is the student T distribution. It has, say, K degrees freedom. Depends on the quality of data and the quantity of data you have. And it has two parameters. And here's some insight for the second factor, student T adjustment. We look at investor behavior. Investor normally switch between two moods, two types of mood. One is greed. We have seen that the NASDAQ, the internet stock, all that. And one is fear. Basically, both sides of tails, the probability are inflated. And this student T adjustment actually just explains that adjustment. And also consistent with volatility smile we observe in option prices. And also it's consistent with the higher cost of capital for very leveraged contracts. Again, we need to do some reality check. Let's look at some empirical data. I was fortunate to have the cat bond transactions in 1999 and year 2000. That was the best possible data you can get. And actually that was the, that inspired me to work on this two-factor model, because I found out that one-factor model didn't work very well. And those cat bond transactions fitted very well to this two-factor model. And we'll show you a plot. Red is the empirical yield spread for the cat bond. There were about 16 transactions in 1999, and they fitted the two-factor model. And this two-factor model actually gives you a very good fit. Another researcher, Morton Lane, proposed a model. He used three parameters. In fact, with the two parameters, give you a much better fit than his three-factor model. And I use the same parameters. Say this is 99. The two parameters, one is lambda, one is the student T degree freedom. The degree freedom is about 5, and lambda is about 0.45. And use the same parameters, I projected or priced year 2000 transactions. And you can see that this is also very close. But for after September 11, the market price rate jumped. And here, everything was before September 11. So this CAD bound, a lot of people say, okay, we don't care about CAD bound because the transaction is too thin. What about corporate bond? Corporate bond, we have different ratings, bond classes, AAA to CCC. And again, I fit it to two-factor model. Fit it very well, and here the fit to different bond classes, from AAA to CCC. And lambda is about the same for as a CAD bond, but the student T of degree freedom, student T is about six, around six. So what it says is that CAD bond has a higher parameter uncertainty. However, speaking it in a different way, CAD bond offers more attractive returns to investors because of information. And it's actually, it's very easy to explain. Actually, there are some good opportunities to make money there. The only thing is that there aren't many CAD bond transactions, because I was thinking of to start a hedge fund in CAD bond, because it's very easy to diversify them, right, geographically, and also it's uncorrelated to the market. Actually, a lot of people realize that, and a lot of people showed interest in CAD bond, but the supply, not many insurance companies are issuing CAD bond because there are a lot more new capital injected to the industry in Bermuda. And those companies are going after CAD, property CAD, rather than liability, because liability, especially in the U.S., is very tricky. You cannot win the lawyers. No matter how much money you have, they always, you know, can always get your money. Another application of this two-factor model is portfolio optimization. We have market parameters for lambda, for Q, for different markets, and we can use that to define economic value for shareholders. Well, not necessarily for shareholders, because shareholders, you need to include franchise value, goodwill, all kinds of other stuff. But let's say economic value. And in fact, we can maximize economic value to have an optimized portfolio. In fact, this is an extension of the mean variance framework. I use this for asset allocation, bond, stock, and use some market data. And you can use any correlation structure. And actually, you get very interesting implications. It's very intuitive. And let's move on. There are a lot of interesting stuff here. Let's now talk about very focused issue, capital requirement for a company. Say if you have come up with probably distribution for the whole company, how do you decide the required capital? In banking industry, VAR, or value at risk, is the most commonly used, which is essentially the quantile or percentile, right? And tail VAR, a lot of people talk about the coherent risk measure. It's a big topic. Everybody talks about it. I'm going to here talk about coherent risk measure, but in a deeper framework. In fact, I only need two axioms. One is that if X is always less than Y, the risk measure X and Y here is the shortfall or the deficit for the company. If X is less than Y, then the required capital should be always less. Common sense. And two, if X and Y are co-monotone, basically there's no diversification benefit between the two, the risk matter should be additive. I don't think Professor Asner and his colleagues use the second axiom, because the second axiom is more fundamental. He used two or three axioms to describe this, but I believe this is more fundamental because you can get better result. And in 97, we proved the following theorem in the actual literature. From these axioms, you can show that the only coherent risk measures are the following. A function G is a change measure applied directly to the cumulative distribution function. The G is an increasing function with zero probability goes to zero and full probability one goes to one. It's a change of probability distribution. And it needs to be applied directly to the cumulative distribution function. And that's the key. Once you know that, it's very simple. But this is the key. You need to apply directly to the cumulative distribution function. And then your risk measure would be expected value under the new distribution, new probability measure. And if you want to be coherent, this function G here need to be continuous. Then you can think that, there are many such functions, infinitely many. I think you are right. And first one is a jump function, it's a quantile. It's not coherent because it's not continuous. And that's why. And the tail var is a linear function. For any probability before hit alpha, say 9.95, you transform them to zero. And for the probability greater than alpha, you do a linear function. But you can see that it's continuous at alpha, at your threshold, but it's not differentiable. And there are many other smooth functions. I'm going to give you one now. I'm going to choose this function G, again, the one factor transform. For any distribution, you apply normal inverse, shift by lambda, and apply normal distribution again. It's a smooth, so it's coherent. The key here is how do you choose lambda? And we have very good base to choose lambda. Okay, for normal distribution, we want 95th percentile, right? For normal distribution, in fact, say alpha is 0.95, then I just do normal inverse. The lambda will be 1.645. If we want 97.5%, the lambda will be 2. It's very simple. And then we can define the risk measure as the expected value under the risk-adjusted distribution. Very simple. The same framework, but I believe this transformation is better because it's smooth, also because it's consistent with Kaplan Black-Scholes. When F, the distribution of X, is normal distribution, going to give you, this transformation is going to give you another normal distribution, excuse me. The same standard deviation, but the mean shifted. In fact, when F is normal distribution, this risk measure is going to give you exactly the percentile for normal distribution. And this gives us a basis for using this risk measure for capital requirement. For log normal, the transform is going to give you another log normal distribution. In fact, say alpha is 0.95 here, then this for log normal distribution, this risk measure is going to give you another percentile, which say alpha is 0.95, then this risk measure is going to give you a percentile higher than 0.95, and which makes sense because log normal has a skew, and normal does not have a skew. For normal distribution, give you the exact same percentile, but for log normal, going to give you instead of 95, maybe 96 or 97, and which makes sense because it reflects the skew in the distribution. And here's a very simple example. Two portfolios, A and B, those are the loss amounts. You can see that portfolio B, in fact, is higher risk. Most people would agree that portfolio B is higher risk. If you calculate the VAR, value at risk will be 1, because that's the 95th percentile. Will be all 1. I did not display that. But for tail VAR, very popular one, it give you always give you 3. But this the measure I'm proposing, in fact, can differentiate between A and B. It shows that B, portfolio B, is higher risk because it reflects not only the expected deficit, but the higher moments of deficit. It's a very simple example. Another simple example, we have, for a company, the risk managers came up with 10 scenarios. Those are the loss amounts. And the risk manager is thinking about taking some risk management risk control so that he can eliminate or hedge the first 9 scenarios. And for the 10th one, he cannot do anything. For example, the terrorist attack. And tail VAR for both cases would always give you 10. That's required capital. But the risk measure I'm proposing here, in fact, shows capital relief. When you take risk measurement, it gives you a capital relief. And that's very important for risk measure, because it should encourage or should give the right incentive for risk management. That's very, very important. I think tail VAR ignores a main part of the distribution. And this new measure actually can pick up all the information. There are many coherent risk measures other than tail VAR. And this risk measure is a better alternative. How are we doing, Harry, with time? Have about 10 minutes? Or yeah? Okay. Okay, the next topic, again, is very interesting. A lot of people talk about coherent risk measure. And now people talking about coherent allocation to business units. That's a hot topic. I've seen many papers coming out. And I can say that with this framework, it offers very natural coherent allocation. Again, let's go back to the exponential tilting we started with. I'm not sure whether you still remember exponential tilting. That's where we started. Instead of applying to X, let's apply to the aggregate, to the company portfolio. So this exponential tilting is going to give you this risk measure, which is actually Asher transform. I'm sure a lot of people have heard about Asher transform. And H transform also, there's an extension of variance loading. So in fact, lambda is exact. For normal distributions, you get exactly the variance loading. And this is a company perspective. You apply it to your company aggregate risk. And which makes sense. For a company, variance is the risk measure. We're switching from in market perspective to company perspective, and we need both for risk management. And now people talk about different kinds of copula. This framework will allow you to have any copula. We are not assuming multivariate normal. In fact, we can assume any correlation model. A very popular one is normal copula, but with stochastic volatility. And one example of that is student T copula. And I like empirical copula. If you have data, like equity data, why don't we just use empirical copula? Empirical copula, basically, you get market multivariate data and rank them to multivariate uniform distribution. And now you just when you have marginal distribution, just apply to them. So actually, it's very straightforward, but it's very powerful. I'm not going to spend more time on correlation models. I just want to say that you can assume any correlation model. This framework would enable you to do that. Okay, what capital allocation? A company has N business units, and we want to allocate the total required capital to different business units. This is very important for internal risk management and also for performance measure. And once we are given the aggregate capital, say assuming using the risk measure we just talked about, now the question is, how do we allocate them to business units? There's a very straightforward answer to that. We first solve this lambda. We apply this exponential tilting to the aggregate, which is H transform. Then we solve this lambda so that it will match with our aggregate capital requirement. And then we apply this exponential tilting to different business units. Do you still remember this function H? Because H lambda XJ, and this is company portfolio, and this is business unit. So what you do, you apply exponential tilting using solved lambda, and this is company portfolio V, and some normalizing constant here. And you may need to subtract the mean to get the required capital. And it's just like pricing that portfolio. But you are not pricing using market portfolio. You are pricing using company portfolio. In that case, you get an allocation of the cost of capital. What about, there's a simple case. When they have multivariate normal distribution, what this framework going to give you is, in fact, a covariance allocation, just like a CAPM type, and which makes sense. And here you can still use any correlation model between business units. In this talk, I just outlined a methodology or framework for measuring insurance risk, the market risk, and credit risk. we have done some projects at my company on enterprise risk management. It's very important to have two perspectives, one's market perspective, one's company portfolio perspective. Otherwise, you run into a lot of problems. I think I just stop here.
Looking at my watch, it's about 6 o'clock. Stuart Leeson has a half an hour talk, and so we thought perhaps a break of 20 minutes. Oh, yeah, we'll have time for questions, but I was going to say a break of about 20 minutes, and then Stuart Leeson will talk for about a half an hour, and we'll have 10 minutes for questions as well. So if you'd like to ask questions, send questions now. I'd be happy to have questions about this sort of latest, research that's Sean and others have been working on for the last few years in the interest of our show. Questions before we take a break?
I'm just wondering if your slides are available online somewhere.
It could be. Yeah, we'll make an arrangement.
And
yes.
Available on the Fields website within 2 hours of the end of this talk.